This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Friday. We've got Jalen Thompson coming up later this hour. We'll check in from spring training with the Kansas City Royals. He's a Royals insider. If you want to win some HTO, let's do that right now. You can get your hands on a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from. So be good for a free cup of tea at either Wichita location, east or west, or down in Derby. All you got to do is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, that's tea to 20357. Good luck, everybody. Welcome back in. We're getting ready for a weekend of college basketball. We are continuing to try, as best anybody can, to follow this wild and crazy NFL offseason, which hasn't even, I don't think, technically started yet. We got a lot of teams without quarterbacks, and we don't have a lot of movement on the quarterback spots. We'll get into that this hour as well, and then look ahead a little bit to KU and K-State's games this weekend on the hardwood. Tommy, This offseason's been nuts, but we knew it was going to be because you've got names like Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr potentially, Sam Darnold, who was an MVP candidate last year. To one degree or another, all kind of looking for homes. Brock Purdy still doesn't have his deal with San Francisco, as they're trying to evaluate and do whatever it is that they think they need to do. Doesn't it all start there for a lot of these teams? What are we waiting for? Who wants who? Where do we think Purdy's going to get re-signed, right?
I think so. I mean, what other option realistically the Niners have? I mean, they could
Aaron
absolutely
Rodgers,
go get Aaron Rodgers.
Derek Carr.
But I mean, you know me, you know, like those old sayings that I love. Like, isn't the old saying, a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush? Like, you've already got
I don't even know what that one means.
I think that's relevant. I don't know. But, like, you've got Brock Purdy there right now. Brock Purdy's not a bad quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he took you to a Super Bowl. So, like, why would you walk away from that right now for something that's more unknown? Like, is a diminished Aaron Rodgers going to get you over the hump? Probably not. I don't think so. Is Kirk Cousins going to get you over the hump? He hasn't been able to do that in his entire career up to this point with every team he's played for. Like, I just don't know why you would want to move away from at least a proven commodity in Brock Purdy to get somebody that has never played in your system before and that it's just a complete unknown.
Because he's going to cost you $50 million. I mean, that's the crux. By the way, the bird in the bush thing.
Yeah, a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush.
Do you know, by the way, why hummingbirds hum?
No.
Because they don't know the lyrics.
Huh. Oh, Max, you got to be on your toes for that, Max. You got to, come on, man. You got to be ready for that. There we go. There it is.
There it is. A little bird humor for you.
I'm going to look up that saying, by the way, because I want to make sure I'm actually using it right.
But $50 million for Purdy, I mean, I get it.
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay. So this is the definition of a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. It's okay. Better to be content with what you have than to risk losing everything by seeking more. So I use that, right? That's the right.
You used use it right, but I still don't understand why that's what. Who has a bird in their hand, or birds aren't ever in bushes?
Brock Purdy is the bird in the hand.
No, I get it. I get the reference.
About the proverb. Okay, I don't know.
Like why? Like who has birds in hands and like that? That's not a thing. Like
I think the point.
Don't put
I think
the wagon
point is,
before the horse. Right, like those make more literal.
I think the point is if you're whole, like think of a bird as like you like your dinner tonight. Like you need to go hunting and get a bird to eat dinner, and you've got one in your hand, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to throw this away because there are two over there, and I'm going to go try to get two of them. Well, you've already got the one. Be content with what you have. That's what it means.
I get the meaning of the proverb. I don't get the reference to birds and hands and bushes.
You have to quote Sheryl Crow. It's not having what you want. It's wanting what you have. Sheryl Crow.
I love it.
Soak up the
sun. That's actually prophetic.
She's a song. She's the songbird of our generation.
Another bird. There you go. So here we go. Brock Purdy last year, Tommy, if we look at yardage, which, you know, their offense is designed a little different. I think he's right outside the top 10. He has a good completion percentage, 20 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. One of the worst ratios among starters last year. A quarterback rating. Let's sort it by quarterback rating. Because you're going to get outliers when we do that. Of the main starters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, and then next page, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13th in quarterback. So average. So the point of all that is to me, like I don't want to call him an average quarterback. He's above average for the league for sure. He's let's call it good, not great, but I think the conundrum for the 49ers, it's sort of like the Cowboys have faced over the years with Dak. He's good for their system, right? He's a good fit where he is. Is Brock Purdy even close to what he is in San Francisco anywhere else?
Who knows? Nobody knows that. You can't know that.
It's
he's
a
only
question.
Played for the Niners.
It's a question for sure, but I don't think he would be. Is Dak Prescott the same quarterback somewhere else he's been able to be in Dallas? I don't think he is. So, you know, there are some quarterbacks where we look at him and we're like, oh, they'd be great anywhere. Like Mahomes isn't probably going to be as good without Andy Reid. I don't even think that's unfair. So I don't want to like overstate that. But when you go to the negotiating table, yeah, Brock Purdy took San Francisco to the Super Bowl. Awesome. So did Jimmy Garoppolo. They've got a good system in place. So as you're evaluating your finances, if you're San Francisco, part of the reason you've been able to do this is because you've had inexpensive quarterbacks, whether it be Garoppolo or whether it be Purdy. You're not going to have that anymore very soon. So I get it. That's why this one's probably going to be a really complicated negotiation. I think the 49ers would love to have Brock Purdy back. But when you're looking at it from a business sense, do you want to have him back at $50 million a year? Because now his value is gone. The value of his contract is gone. So when the value of his contract is gone, now how valuable is Brock Purdy and his 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions last year? That's the problem here and why this one could get a little complicated. Because the 49ers have to consider that, right? Yeah, we could have Brock Purdy for 3 years and $150 million, or we could have Aaron Rodgers for 1 year and $35 million, whatever it is that Rodgers, you know, like what's the difference there? What's the play? I don't think it's as simple as just they got to re-sign Brock Purdy.
Well, so let's say
I don't think he's that kind of quarterback.
Let's say they move away from Brock Purdy. Let's say Aaron Rodgers comes in. They get him on a one-year deal. They already don't have Debo. It looks like they're, you know, at least considering the potential of trading away Brandon Ayuk. Who does Aaron Rodgers have? Like they're going to have to be active there too, right? Like that's going to have to be part of it.
I mean, at that point, if you bring in Rodgers, you probably can bring in Devontae Adams for a year. I mean, you're definitely pushing it all.
How'd that experiment go with the Jets this last year?
No. What I'm saying, you're definitely pushing it all in for that year, but you also have to think about what Brock Purdy did last year and like, what's Brock Purdy going to do without Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk? And now you're committed to $50 million a year for 3 years. I don't think it's any better. You know what I mean? Like, I think Aaron Rodgers had a better, say what you want. Like, his year was probably better than Brock Purdy's last year. So
who's more likely to take the Niners to a Super Bowl next season, Brock Purdy or Aaron Rodgers?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because if you're only talking about this coming season, then that's got to be the number one question. If you're talking about the future, if you're talking about planting the seeds for what you're going to do in the next 5 years, whatever, if you like Rodgers as a bridge type guy to go to play 1 year for you and then you can draft or get somebody in free agency or whatever that is after that, then that's one thing. That's one conversation to have. If you don't want to pay Brock Purdy $50 million for however many years down the road, that's a different conversation entirely. If we're talking about just this season, and you talked about pushing it all in, whatever, for the Niners, and I think we both can agree that that window for the Niners, the current window they're in, doesn't have a whole lot left, especially the fact that they're moved away from Debo and they're
Christian McCaffrey.
Like, right, exactly. Who's more likely to take you to a championship this coming season, Brock Purdy or Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, I think, was better than Brock Purdy last year. I mean, just kind of definitively was better, honestly. Derek Carr was better before he got hurt, for sure. Another guy that might be out there. I don't know the answer to that. And the problem is, if you don't think Brock Purdy is the kind of quarterback who's going to go out there and win despite who's around him, and there are those guys, right? Mahomes and Allen and Lamar and Joe Burrow, and probably now we could maybe say Jalen Hurts, although he's always had a good cast. So have some of those other guys. I think, you know, after two Super Bowl appearances and the win and everything, you could put Jalen Hurts there. Like, who?
I mean,
is Brock
Purdy
going to be one of the guys that goes and wins despite what's on the roster? I don't know that I think he is.
But I also don't know if Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career can win despite your roster. I mean, remember.
But you're only stuck with, if you went that way, you're only stuck with Rodgers for 1 year. Whereas you'd be stuck with Purdy now as you try to rebuild.
It depends upon the priority. Like, is it more important to push everything in right now this season? Or is it to look ahead for the future? Keep in mind, it's been 15 years since Aaron Rodgers has been to the Super Bowl. 15 years. Brock Purdy was there 2 years ago.
Yeah, don't misunderstand. Like, Aaron Rodgers isn't the end-all be-all. Like, he represents another option for San Francisco that doesn't tether them potentially to a quarterback that may not be able to get it done. Let's continue this conversation on the other side, and then we'll transition in the segment as well to some college hoops this weekend. We got Jalen Thompson coming later in the hour. Stick around. Sports Daily coming right back.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
On our way into work, you want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app. Visit Odyssey.com. Search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. Appreciate everybody that listens to us on the app, whenever and wherever it is that you do that. We appreciate your being here with us. You can also leave us voice messages there and, you know, tell us how much you think we suck. That'd be great. We might even put it out over the air. No, we love everybody. Hope everybody's...
Why would anybody tell us that we suck?
I don't know. Those people, maybe they're feeling froggy. Maybe they think it'll be funny. And maybe we suck. I don't know.
Speak for yourself.
Brock Purdy does not suck, but he's also not, we use the quarterback word elite. This is what we're talking about to end the last segment. Let's finish this through, and then we'll talk a little college hoops here before we get Jalen Thompson in a little bit later. I get the issue. I think San Francisco needs to re-sign him. I think it's challenging, though, because to what? Right? Like, he shouldn't. If Brock Purdy digs his heels in the sand and says, I want to be the highest paid quarterback in football, if I'm San Francisco, I would say, good luck, go finding that deal. Like, see you later. because nobody's going to give you that deal. We're certainly not. Nobody else will either. That I don't think Brock Purdy has a tremendous amount of bargaining power right now. And I think that's the problem for Brock Purdy. And while the, why this might get contentious, I think Kyle Shanahan loves Brock Purdy. I think the Niners probably love Brock Purdy. I think they probably love the way he fits. But again, when you're the front office and not the coach, do you love the way he fits when he's not on a rookie deal? Do you love the way he fits when he is a free agent? And that is where I think the challenge comes. He's got a $5 million cap hit this year before he's an unrestricted free agent. He wants a deal. He's earned a deal. But how much is the deal, right? If he says, I want to be the highest paid, again, if I'm the 49ers, I say, good luck. Go find that deal. You ain't going to find it. No team in football would make Brock Purdy the highest paid quarterback in football. Right? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong about that at all. I mean, I think that he's got to, it's a two-way street. I think he's got to be realistic on his value as well, whether that's with the Niners or with another team. And you know, there's no indication, at least from what I've read so far, that he is going to play hardball and want to be the highest paid quarterback. Like, I don't think that that's the path that we're going down. But if that does end up happening, then yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame the Niners, even if I would like to continue to have Brock Purdy lead my team. I would understand them saying, look, we're just not comfortable committing to you as the highest paid quarterback for, you know, however long. It's a give and take. That's what every negotiation is. I think that he's got to appropriately value himself. Maybe there's another team out there that's quarterback needy enough that is willing to give him more money. And then in that case, go and do that. But I do think that the best case scenario, I think what's going to be best for both parties is if he's able to work it out and figure out a way to stay long-term with the Niners at a rate that is appropriate for both sides.
Let's look at right now in the league. Dak Prescott, of course, reset it last year at $60 million a year, which is so stupid, but whatever. Right now, you've got Prescott, Burrow, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, Jared Goff, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and Jalen Hurts all above $50 million. So if it was as simple as saying, all right, you know, $50 million a year for Brock Purdy, that's sort of where he would slot in. Behind those guys, ahead of Kyler Murray, ahead of Deshaun Watson, ahead of Kirk Cousins, ahead of Patrick Mahomes, which is laughable, of course, ahead of Josh Allen, which is laughable, of course, ahead of Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, and then you get down to a level where he's clearly above those guys. So, you know, where do you factor him in? If you think he's more like Matt Stafford or Baker Mayfield, which I kind of do, quite honestly, it's going to be more like $40 million a year. If you're Purdy, though, you're going to say, I'm certainly better than, you know, Deshaun Watson and Kirk Cousins and Kyler Murray. And now you're looking at more like $50 million a year. I think this lands at $50 million a year. I think the Niners would be comfortable with that if they could shrink down the length of the deal. Of course, you know, Purdy's not going to want to do that. But it's, if you're John Lynch, the Niners GM, you have to think about it as, okay, if we commit to Purdy, what do we have around him as he gets older, as we just traded away Debo, as Kittle gets older, as Trent Williams gets older, as Fred Warner gets older, as Bosa gets older? Like, are you really going to be able to compete with Purdy when their ultra-talented roster ages out in the next handful of years? Or do you try to tether it to a window that exists with those guys? But that would require Purdy to take a shorter deal than most of these quarterbacks are taking. This one is probably the most complicated we've seen since Dak Prescott, honestly. Like, it's sort of like Prescott. You're trying to pay a guy who's been good, but also give him a good enough supporting cast because he's not like best. Still allow him to have a chance to win it. It's hard.
But can't you try to accomplish both of those things at the same time? Like, can't you try to accomplish the short term and the long term together? I mean, that's what Brett Veach does every single year. I mean, and even just earlier this week, like, the Chiefs have this window, right? But they're extending that window because they traded a 32-year-old guard in exchange for, you would think, conceivably re-signing their 25-year-old guard long-term. Like, you can take the current window and try to extend it. So I think that the conversation, honestly, for me, is less about Brock Purdy himself and more about what's John Lynch going to do to extend that window longer. And as those other players start aging out Kittle and McCaffrey and Bosa and, like, you know, these other guys, what are you going to do to continue to – if you're going to lock yourself into Brock Purdy long-term, then you also have to be committed to extending that window and not going through a full-fledged rebuild. I look at what the Bills went through last year, and in my mind, I thought they were rebuilding. I thought it was like, we're tearing this thing down to the studs around Josh Allen, and it's going to probably take a little bit of time to get it back up and running, and it didn't. Like, and Josh Allen is not Brock Purdy and vice versa, so there's a difference there, but – They basically committed to stripping it all down and rebuilding it. It just so happened that they had an uber talented quarterback where they didn't need to, you know, necessarily worry about how long it took to make that rebuild. The Niners, it's a different situation. I think you've got to be a lot more strategic and deliberate in how you're extending that window. But
yeah,
I think it can be done. I think it can be done.
3 years, $150 million. But my point in all of it is Purdy's going to have to make a concession. He's just going to have to, or it could get real dicey. If Purdy puts his heels in the sand and says, nope, I want to be the highest paid guy, because that's what this league does. They, you know, young quarterback on the first deal, then I think he's going to have a problem, and it will be a fascinating one to watch. And then you get the trickle down effect of, okay, what about Rodgers? What about Carr? What about Cousins? What about Sam Darnold? What about Russell Wilson? Maybe even, like, there's all these other guys that outside of Russell Wilson, I would guess at least Rodgers and Sam Darnold are starters next year. I would guess that Carr and Cousins could also be, at least at the start of the year, starters. So we'll see what happens. It's a fascinating quarterback offseason, as it always is. Let's talk a little college hoops here, Tommy, because we've got Jalen Thompson in next segment to talk Royals. You got two senior days this weekend, KU, K-State. I said earlier, it's not, I don't think much is going to change this weekend. I mean, of course, we would like to see them both win on their senior days. They should, right? We're not going to have lines yet, so I wouldn't. K-State's not going to be favored at home, but it'll be close probably. And KU will be favored over Arizona at home, I'm pretty sure. I'd like to see KU close out a game. Let's put it that way. I'd love to see KU close out a close game late. K-State, I'm just not as worried. I'd like to see Coleman Hawkins be healthy going into the Big 12 tournament. That's the most important thing for K-State. Win, lose, don't care. I need to know that Coleman Hawkins is healthy. For KU, can they make a big play late in a game? Can a guard make a big play late in a game? What is Diggy Coit going to give them now in this game? And what's interesting to me about the KU thing is they could go beat Arizona and just lean in on a senior day, lean into Dickinson and Adams and beat Arizona. They could totally do that. And they might. Wouldn't it be nice to see, though, if they had to do it maybe in a little different way? If it was a close game and you had to let the guards go make a play, like see Diggy Coit grow into that role a little bit? I don't know. Like, I it's hard because KU's been hard to evaluate all season long at what you want to see from them. And what's even possible for them.
Well, and I think on top of that, too, with Kansas in a clutch situation, because I think that, you know, it's probably fairly likely, at least, that, you know, this is going to be probably a one possession game down the stretch. That's just kind of the way that I think Arizona plays and the way that KU has played this season. I don't think that we're going to see a scenario where either team is going to be able to pull away. I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be a close game down the stretch. So, yeah, we need to see Kansas be able to be clutch because they haven't been clutch. But then also, it's not just on the offensive end. I would love to see a guy like Diggy Coit or even Zeke Mayo. I mean, that'd be huge for KU.
Getting him
to see Mayo
back
on track in a clutch situation. I'm not going to hold my breath about that, but that would be great. It's also about getting the stops on the other end, too. In the last two games that KU has played, when you're talking about top-tier opponents in Houston and Texas Tech, every time one of those teams needed a clutch basket, they got it. KU was not able to shut them down on the defensive end of the court. And a lot of times, those clutch shots came from beyond the arc. So I would love to see that from Kansas. It's not just how can you guys go down and score when you need a bucket, but how can you stop a really good team when it matters most? And you need to get that stop. And we haven't seen either one of those things from Kansas. I go back to before they started the last five-game stretch of the regular season. And I remember saying, like, hey, don't get too excited if Kansas beats Oklahoma State and Colorado, because I think they're probably going to lose the final three games. They're one game away from that prediction coming true. So they've got to get, in my opinion, they've got to get this senior day game, not just for seeding purposes, but just for pride, just for a little bit of, like, swagger on senior day inside Allen Fieldhouse. KU doesn't lose those games. You don't lose on senior day in Allen Fieldhouse. You've got to get this one, I think, for pride, for swag, for ego, for all of that. The Jayhawks have to have this one.
Let's go back to when we were having the discussion about the Final Five. And you know, we ran out all the scenarios and we certainly disagreed on their chances to do anything. Do you think that the way that they have played the last two has encouraged you at all off of maybe where you thought it would be in that five-game scenario if they didn't win any of them? Because I think it probably has. Remember, that was coming right out of Utah, out of the Utah trip, and how bad it was. I do think, regardless of what happens Saturday, because I'm not sure that it's ultimately going to matter too much to KU's chance. I think they are what they are. I do think seeing them have a shot to beat both Tech and Houston, and it's not excuse me, it's not anything else, but it would have been easy, I think, to imagine a scenario where going into that five-game stretch where they got housed by both of those teams. They did not do that. And if, like, so I think, like, their abilities and their X's and O's sort of are what they are, but I think their attitude and energy has certainly gotten back on track from what it was when we were first having that conversation.
Look, I think that, sure, if they had gotten just smacked around by Houston and Texas Tech, that would be absolutely disappointing. But at the same time, we're talking moral victories here. They still lost both of those games.
That's not what I'm trying to
do. And here's the thing. They lost both of those games. They were incredibly unclutch in both of those games.
Totally.
And especially from the guard position, right? Like the turnovers and just the lapses, the mental lapses, all of that, the execution issues, things that, you know, like I remember mentioning it too, like Bill Self leaving a timeout in his pocket at the end of the Tech game, like all of those different things. I don't want to say I'm more optimistic because I'm not. Like, they found another way to lose. They weren't able to to pull it out. So no, I don't think I am more optimistic long term. I think that again, you lose by 30 to Houston. I thought that was maybe on the table. Maybe not 30, but losing by double digits, I thought was absolutely in the realm of possibility against Houston, and maybe the same thing for Texas Tech. Neither one of those things happened. That's good. Sure, like, patch on the back, awesome. You didn't get blown out by either one of those teams. I'm not sure that it gives me a whole lot more hope, though, as we're talking about the tournament.
So let me, I'll try to explain, and it's really hard to explain, and I've struggled with it for a while. When the Utah trip happened, because we've thought KU, you know, well before the Utah trip, was going to end up it's going to be matchup dependent. They're going to have to play good defense. Like nothing's really changed for KU in the last 2 months of basketball. What changed for me on the Utah trip was the effort, right? They just they were falling apart. They were falling apart. And so I think for me, it's not moral victories. It's not anything. They're just when they finished the Utah trip, like what was fading away was the thought that they have the ability to go hang with any team in the country. That was fading for me at that point. That's where it's like, I got to see. Now I'm not feeling that way anymore. I don't think they're going to do anything crazy or like, we still got to see the matchups and all that thing, all those things. But at minimum, I think they have stopped falling apart at the seams. So they're sort of just back to this. Yeah, they've got a chance in every game they play, but they can't ever get it done.
I get that.
At least back to that.
I can agree with you on that. I mean, I think that that's the case. Like, I don't think that we're going to, you know, unless they get matched up in the NCAA tournament against a team that can just push them around and out-tough them and then also make big-time shots, and KU has to try to match threes with twos. At that point, yeah, you might be looking at that's going to be a really difficult matchup and probably a loss let's be honest, for the Jayhawks. It probably would be if they're matched up against one of those teams in the NCAA tournament. I think about, like, they've ran up against those buzzsaws in the NCAA tournament
Houston.
Before.
That's Houston defined, what you just described.
Right. Well, right. So, yeah. So, I mean, but I think that at the same time, too, and I posed this question before, Kansas in the NCAA tournament, it's a one-possession game with a minute to go. Do you have any confidence at all that Kansas is going to be able to be clutch enough to close out a game and get a win? Because I don't. And I don't think that even the Houston and Texas Tech game have made me more confident that they can do that. In fact, I've probably gone even the other direction on that a little bit, just because I don't have a whole lot of faith whatsoever that they'll be able to close out a game like that in that scenario. I just don't think that that's in their DNA.
Yeah, listen, I don't disagree. I think it's ultimately matchups are going to have to play a factor here, and I'm just like, they need to play teams that are both that just aren't very good offensively, but that are still good teams when you get into the matchups of the low single digits, right? So I'm just looking at KenPom to try and find like those kinds of descriptions. I don't think it's going to be a team that's really good offensively, but maybe another team like Tennessee, for example, is a team they're the best defensive team in the country, but they're not like an elite offensive team. That'd be a team maybe you'd like to get matched up with. I don't think it's going to be a team like Alabama, right, who's really good offensively and not as good defensively, because I think a good, not great, elite defense can still slow KU down. I think the trouble is when you play a great offense and they hit some shots, and then you just don't have the ability to keep up with that.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And that insider is Jalen Thompson, KC Star, beat reporter for the Kansas City Royals. You can follow him at Jalen Thompson on X. Glad to have Jalen with us again here on a Friday. Jalen, how's spring training treating you?
It's going good. It's going good. You know, it's almost that time.
It is almost that time. It's really close to that time. So as we come down this home stretch, if you want to call it that, I don't think we're quite to the home stretch, but we're getting closer. What is the top priority right now, do you think, for the Royals and what they're looking at, what they're trying to evaluate at this point?
I think it comes down to who's going to play in the outfield, who's going to be the three guys that you can consistently lean on out there to open the season. Will it be Jonathan India? Will it be Michael Massey out there on opening day? The way MJ Melendez is hitting right now, he's certainly shown an improvement this spring. Does he earn a spot in that left field to start the season? And if that's the case, how do you divvy up third base? Because you know India and Massey are going to play every day. So they have a lot of questions that they need to figure out with that left side of the defense. And if they can figure that out, then I think they can put a competitive lineup together to go out and face the Cleveland Guardians on March 27th.
Let's talk about the rotation a little bit, Jalen. There's been some speculation heating up over the last couple of days that Chris Bubich may have solidified the fifth starter role in the rotation. Are you hearing that? Is that premature? Is there still a battle going on for what that fifth rotation spot looks like?
I think Chris Bubich will probably be the guy that will rightfully earn that fifth starter spot. He's definitely certainly a front runner right now. You can't count out Alec Marsh. You can't count out Daniel Lynch IV. Marsh has to continue to get back and get into live games. You know, he was delayed to start the spring. So when you have that and you have Daniel Lynch that it can also operate in the bullpen as well, and he's also left-handed, it seems like Chris Bubich has a firm hold right now on that fifth starter spot. But we'll see what happens as the rest of spring goes. But I think that's a good bet to see Bubich in that fifth spot as a front runner.
I want to talk about yesterday, Jack Caglione, the conversation with him continues. Not a timeline or anything else, but as it pertains to him as a two-way player, what is the chance? And I get it. They're going to focus on hitting, and I don't disagree with it. But what is the chance, would you guess, that at some point when Caglione is a regular part of the roster that he could also double over as any kind of pitcher for this organization?
Those chances, I won't close the door on that if I was just looking on the outside looking in, but I would say that it might be kind of slim, you know, because you're asking a lot of a player to come up and then be a hitter and a pitcher. There's a reason why only Shohei Ohtani is doing it at this level now. And before him, it was Babe Ruth, which was like almost 90 years ago, 100 years ago. So it's very tough to do. I won't say that they won't give him an opportunity to do that at some point, but it's going to be tough. And they like his bat so much. And I think he and his impact for the Royals in the future is going to be with the bat. So I think that's kind of where it will be. But like I said, you don't know. They might need him in a game that might be a blowout and they let him get on the mound for a couple of innings. We never know.
You had a great article the other day, Jalen, about the bullpen for the Royals going into this season and taking a look at the relief pitchers. And we'll see how it all pans out, but it's got to be so much more encouraging for Matt Quatrero to have, you would think, pretty reliable options in high leverage situations and late inning situations, that sort of thing, than what we saw for a portion, at least, of last season when that bullpen was held together by duct tape. It was James MacArthur in a lot of situations when you're like, man, is there any other options? Is there anything else that they can do? But now you've got Estevez, you've got Urcig, Hunter Harvey looks to be healthy, John Schreiber in high leverage situations potentially as well. And that's not all. They've got a lot more depth. So that's got to be a lot more encouraging going into this season for the Royals.
Yeah. When you look at the matchups that the Royals face down the stretch, you have the wild card game against the Baltimore Orioles. You have the ALDS against the Yankees. Those were tough teams that have been very competitive teams offensively. You know, they could mix and match so well with what the Royals were putting out on the field as far as the bullpen. And you were relying on Angel Zerpa and Sam Long, and they pitched well. Daniel Lynch IV, they pitched well in those spots. Chris Bubich. But now you have more established bullpen relievers that you can turn to counteract that. And you have more firepower. And I think that's what the Royals kind of missed last year. Like, it was underestimated the ability of Hunter Harvey. He can throw 99 miles per hour. He has a flamethrower as well. The Royals didn't have that. Only had Lucas that could really do that at the back end of that bullpen. Now you have him, you have Estevez, you have more, you know, velocity that you need to get those guys out in the key moments. And I think that's what's going to be the difference with this Royals team. Is that they can go 6-7 innings, you turn it over to that bullpen, and you feel pretty good about winning a game that day.
How many games are they going to win? Vegas has them at 82. Jalen, we talked about this earlier this week. Why are the Royals being so undervalued nationally? They're only the fourth out of five odds-on favorite to win the division. They're only projected by the odds to win 82 games. Mm-hmm. That people are projecting not only a step back, but a major step back for them. Yet you see Bobby Witt Jr. as an MVP candidate. I don't get it. The only thing I can think of is a baked in massive starting pitching regression from what they had a year ago. Because the lineup should be better. Vinny Pasquantino's healthy. He should be better. MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe aren't going to be off to the slow start, regardless of what else they get. And, of course, then the India trade. So the only thing I can figure is massive starting pitcher regression. Do you read it that way, or do you have a better, you know, gauge of why this might be?
I think that is a big part of it, because the Royals were really healthy starting pitching-wise last year. Really healthy. I mean, they all made about 25 starts, give or take, you know, everyone, that the main guys, right? And I don't understand the whole point of them taking a giant step back. The offense couldn't hit last year, and they still won 86 games. I mean, you look at the Royals lineup last year, once you got past Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi, you could easily go through the rest of that lineup. So to say that they can't win 86 games when they approved the lineup with getting Jonathan India, and you, like you said, MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfroe, potentially getting off to better starts in our healthier and made adjustments. I just don't see how 82 wins is going to be where they're going to end up at, especially with an improved bullpen like we just talked about. I personally said 90 games. That's where I was at. And I know that could be on the high side of things, but if you won 86 last year with relatively the same team and you get better in key areas, I just can't see a step back. This team is moving forward, not moving backwards.
I think the only thing that I am concerned about going into this season for the Royals is what happens in their lineup after about the fifth spot in the lineup, you know, that bottom of the lineup. And I know that, you know, you've talked a little bit about, like, can Hunter Renfroe, can MJ Melendez, can, you know, some of these other guys be able to recapture maybe some of what the expectations at least have been for them offensively. I guess my only worry, and hopefully it doesn't come to fruition, but my only worry is that once you get to the second half of the lineup, you just kind of fall off a cliff. And, you know, so what do you think it's going to take for some of these guys in the bottom of the lineup, you know, to be able to put together good offensive seasons?
Yeah, I think for Hunter Renfroe, it's just getting back to the same player that he was before he came to Kansas City. Hunter Renfroe, for years, you could pencil him in for 20 home runs. Like, set it, forget it, it's in stone. That's what he's going to hit. I think he has to get back to that power element. For MJ Melendez, I thought we got a really good look at his new swing when he had a home run on a pitch that was on the inside part of the plate, and he actually got to it and turned it and sent it over the right field wall. I think that was very key for him, that he could do that. Now, can he do it consistently? That's the question. But if one of those guys can just have a solid season, I think that helps the bottom half of that lineup. Because you still have Michael Massey that's going to hit five. And then you have Melendez or Renfroe. One of those two, if they're playing solidly, that helps solidify the middle of that order. And then you just need Garcia and Isbell to get on base to flip it over for the top of the lineup. So I feel like they need to have someone really have a breakout season from the bottom of that order. And it doesn't matter who it is. It could be Garcia. It could be Renfroe, Melendez, Isbell, just someone. To strike fear in the hearts of the opposing team so they don't feel like they have three or four automatic outs like they did last year.
I put you on the spot here. I didn't give you time to prepare for this, but we can finish with it. Who give me two players, one for, like, who do you think is the most likely to regress from last season, and who do you think is most likely to take the next step this season?
Wow. That's a tough question. I think a person to take the next step, and I think it's going to be MJ. I really do.
I agree.
I think this is the year for him. He knows it has to be the year for him, and I think he will take that next step. As far as taking a step back, and I don't know how far of a step back is going to be, but I would say Michael Massey, only because if he's going to be playing second base and left field, toggling between the two, and then trying to manage his back and trying to work through that, if that flares up, that could be a lot on the player going back and forth. And he's never really done it before. So I won't say it's a major step back, but I could see maybe a slight dip in what he did produce last year.
Well, and I think that answer, the fact that you didn't say a pitcher, it should be encouraging for Royals fans. Should be encouraging.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't see Seth Lugo or Cole Reagans taking a step back. I mean,
or Waka,
just the way they pitch and the way they
Lindsen.
Yeah, I just can't see. And they're all former All-Stars. They know how to pitch. So I think they will be okay. I think the pitching is the strongest part of the team, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And the bullpen's better than it was a year ago. That's why we can't. It's been strange. All right, Jalen. So you've got some great stuff to get. How much longer are you going to be out at spring training?
I'm going to be out here for a couple weeks. I'm going to come back to KC for a bit, then come back out and then get ready to go.
All right. There you go. Jalen Thompson reporting for us from spring training. We'll have him each and every Friday here for the Royal season. Jalen, we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jacob and Tommy. See you guys later.
Sounds good. It's going to be a fun season. All right, Tommy, that'll do it for a week of Sports Daily. Real quick, get you caught up on all the special programming here on the network. You've got Shocker Baseball today, 2:45. Saturday, you've got 11:30 K-State Basketball pregame coverage on KFH. Wichita State Baseball moves over to KNSS at 1:45.
Butler basketball in the NJCAA tournament is on KFH at 3:45. Then on Sunday, Shocker baseball right here on KFH at 11:15. Shocker basketball at noon over on KEYN. And then Wichita State women's basketball in the AAC tournament, 7:45. That'll be on KFH. It's the postseason. The next time we talk, Tommy, on Monday, we will be digging into postseason brackets, conference tournaments. I cannot wait.
Let's go. Let's get it going. I'm excited.
Thanks for Jalen Thompson stopping by. Go back to the Odyssey app if you missed any of our Royals conversation. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jake. We'll see you Monday.